Mike, at what point on the flight deck, and I know that your captain that day had experience, thankfully, towing gliders.
And having that's some something that doesn't come to light until you, right. Later you talk about this stuff.
At what point did you say, well, you know, we're gonna try again, or we're gonna cut this guy loose, and we can't risk what we've got on this jet? Was that even discussed?
I don't believe that was ever discussed amongst the crew members. You know, our job as a tanker is to always be there for the receiver, whatever it takes to get the receiver to do their mission. So I don't believe that ever entered our thought process. We were more concerned about, okay, we did plan A, didn't work. Plan B, didn't work. Let's go to C. And we just kept trying, and through the grace of God, we were able to do the last hookup to get him up to a certain altitude where his engine had cooled off enough to maintain level flight. And all the while, you know, we're trying, our NAVS act are trying to plot us the shortest distance between two points. You know, we're out in the Atlantic trying to find Gander, two points there, we're trying to scramble search and rescue. Our crew chiefs are back here trying to maintain some type of semblance of order because the airplane's going up and down, and as you're moving throttles back and forth, the airplane is designed to give you these little warning signals and sound and horns. So we're trying to silence that so we don't concern the passengers. We don't want them to get upset what's going on.
Never mind the dives.
Never mind the dive, you know, the roller coaster effect there.
Now, but at one point, you're how high? Because I know Ron, by the way, is writing a book about this. We're going to talk about this later. And Mike, the crew chief who had to ride around with all this, probably has some great stories, too, we're going to dig out of him, other than just looking at that handsome mustache tonight. It's more than just a pretty face. He's going to give us some details from the back. But how low did you really get that day?
We got below 2,000 feet. And if you could imagine when it's looking out at the ocean, seeing the white caps, seeing the waves, you know, that's what we're seeing out there. And Doug's back there is watching the F-4 crew. They're actually cinching down. You know, the pilot and the Wizzo are actually cinching it because they're thinking they're going to have to ditch. And they're going to have to either bail out or ditch the aircraft. One of the two is going to happen. That's going through their thought process. So we are still trying to effect, you know, some type of a air refueling to help him and get him, tow him to a safer altitude to get him closer to Gander where he can actually effect a landing.
And Mike, eventually, as the crew chief, you guys land the airplane. Walk me through what happens next, because this is when I think it probably realized just what you did. I mean, from the back end of this, where you had all those passengers and everything that had been going on, what walk us through what happened next.
Well, when we landed, like Mike said earlier, we gave a bit of fuel to the wingman. And he was sent, go put your airplane on the ground. If something happens and the runway's closed, at least you'll be safe. So we took him out of the picture by putting him on the ground. That just remained the cripple and us. And the lack of that engine on that cripple took away some of his hydraulics, and that affects his braking and his ability to roll and make turns. And with the prevailing winds that we had over there at Gander, he was given a choice of either going around and coming in from the opposite direction to land into the wind, or coming in hot and fast and just putting it down with a tailwind, correct?
Correct.
So he was aligned pretty much with the runway, so he opted for that, and he put it down, so then he was safe. We get him off the runway. We come around. Bob Goodman put the aircraft on the ground. We taxied in. I come down out of the aircraft we knew right away that we had to put fuel on board so that we could continue our flight across to England. And I'd like to add something to that in a minute. So I come down with the down locks and the door locks, and I start to go towards the nose gear to pin the nose gear, and I look over there. Well, the two pilots and the two wingmen were standing line abreast, and they didn't know if I was the crew chief or the boom operator or the pilot or whoever, but I'll tell you what. the salute that they snapped right there on the spot, that image is, well, the Marines don't snap a salute that sharp.
Messengers doing it this way, because you shared an interesting story on that.
They were, I was, after this whole thing, I'm still in super crew chief mode, right? My heart is pumping out 1,000 beats a minute, and I'm thinking that my engines are burnt, and so I want to get out and check my engine oil, and I haven't even digested this whole thing at this point. I knew at points that it was getting serious, especially when I saw his face when SARS was launched. And I said, "What's SARS?" And he says, "Search and rescue." So there was a moment of silence there. But still with the professionalism from Mike and Bob Goodman and Wojo and Doug over here, like we had talked about, the things on the F-4 were breaking one at a time. And, well, there was never a panic. And this broke, we'll do this. This broke, yeah. It was, we'll do this. And it was very calculated and you know, methodical. Like, they practiced it and rehearsed it. And you don't. This was a first. And so we get on the ground, and I want to check my engine oil. So my focus was strictly on that right then. And I threw a case of engine oil down my toolbox, a ladder, and I run over to number one engine. And the F4 is on the wingtip, and as I'm going past it, I could see the whole tail is covered in oil, yeah. Like a glazed donut. He had lost all of his engine oil, and that turned out to be what was wrong with his engine. He had an oil leak, which left his nozzle open, reducing his power, and then he lost engine oil pressure. He shut the engine down and eventually seized, which is caused more of a drag for him. But I get up on the ladder. Mike had opened up the crew, the cargo door, pushed the gate across. All the passengers had assembled in that cargo door area while our crew, the flight crew, assembled at our nose and then walked over to meet the F4 crew. And we heard this eruption of applause from all the passengers, just like Tom Cruise coming back from the dogfight. And that was the moment that it hit me what we had just done. And I realized.
That's an amazing story. Well, it's a great story. And I think it really brings home the fact, General Fogelman, and that you can probably attest to, that the Air Force is truly a team sport. And especially when it comes to its airmen and to the way that you operate these systems. With such professionalism, you have to remember this story from your time in active duty.
Yeah.
What do you want to tell these guys tonight?
Well, I don't think I can tell these guys anything except, you know, I spent 29 and a half years flying fighters, and my only understanding of tankers was you tell me what track you're in, what time I'm supposed to be there. And I pull up behind you, and it's flawless. You know, I mean, it just, and you don't think about, and after 29 and a half years, then I got reassigned to Air Mobility Command, to Transcom, and suddenly took on the responsibility for the tanker force. And that's when I became cognizant of how much it takes in crew coordination and crew management to make that weapon system effective. And so I think what you see here with this crew was a prime example, even with a rookie on board, you know, of how the training and everything went down right down the path, that you had the right professionalism at the right place at the right time.
Exactly.
And so that's it.
General, if I could just add to that,
sure.
There were two rookies on board. It was also Mike Clover's first TDY.
That was my maiden flight going European Task Force.
But
we broke him in right.
But
there you
it's, if I could say, you know, we talked about it this morning at this radio show, and you know, my reflection on it, and I put this down in my little calendar. I'm sure General flew with one of these too.
Yeah.
It was one sortie. It was an IFE with an F-4 diverted to Gander, and we had a second sortie. That's my recollection of the mission. Yeah.
Now listen, we're going to do a Q&A tonight, and somebody out here has to ask the question, who is still not allowed in Europe, okay? Can you do that tonight for me? We're going to get to that.